1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live here Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 every Saturday at 4 p.m. Or, of course, if you're listening to the podcast version of the show, which you can listen to anytime you like, anywhere you like. You actually can even download it a little bit before it goes on the air here on News Radio. Either way, hope you're having a great day today, and I hope you hope to make your day just a little bit better. We're going to bring you up to date as much as we can on everything going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do that is my co-host, Jeremy Branch. Jeremy, welcome.
A valid disclaimer for this week in particular. As many of the listeners know, Julio is very, very wrapped up in the world of Pensacon, and I've also been getting things prepared for that. And so we're a little bit behind on all of the stuff that people are watching. Hopefully, though, we'll get to circle back around to it in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you are heavily involved in putting on a big pop culture celebration and you get into the last couple of months before that happens, you find yourself too busy to actually consume any of the pop culture that you're trying to celebrate, which is is very much the situation that I'm in right now. I haven't been able to watch anything longer than probably a trailer. I've seen a trailer or two here and there, but probably nothing longer than a trailer in the past couple of months, unless it's, you know, like sometimes I'll throw some like Facebook reels or TikTok or whatever on, or something on YouTube on as like background noise. But yeah, like if I'm consuming like a show, a movie, I'm not one of those people that wants to sit there in second screen and not pay attention to it.
Isn't that interesting? What a novel concept. I'm the same way. It's like I'm able to listen to, I don't know, four or five podcasts a week, but it's only because I don't really have to listen to the four or five podcasts. They're just kind of on. But I don't want my TV shows made that way.
Yeah, same. And, you know, when I talk about like something I put on in the background, like, you know, like I enjoy a lot. There's a lot of YouTubers that I follow. The videos that they may be doing that I would be able to put on in the background are not necessarily anything that I have to have my eyes on.
Yeah, right.
Which is weird for if you're thinking about it being a video medium, but you know, if it's a you know, discussion piece on music or on, you know, a movie or something like that, I don't necessarily have to have my eyes on the screen to follow it, and I can be doing something else while I'm doing it. So it could be on in the car, or it can be on while I'm in the shower, or with my phone screen off while I'm lying in bed getting ready to go to sleep, things like that. You know, when I just want something to kind of be a little bit stimulating, but not have to have my full attention.
Yeah, for me, it's not to say drown out the anxiety, the voice in my head telling me what I should be doing.
Yeah,
other than that.
Yeah, exactly. Versus, I can do that, and that can be in the background, and that might end up, you know, being half hour, 45 minutes, whatever. Uh-huh. But it's not my undivided attention, and I don't feel the guilt of not getting work done that I would feel if I sat down to watch, you know, even a half hour program. We're going to talk about some things that Jeremy actually took the initiative and put up a post on his Facebook yesterday, just kind of saying, hey, what would you like to hear us talk about? And we got a lot of great feedback, and some of it is stuff that's, you know, more involved, and some of it is like, which without getting too deep into it, but like the new Muppet Show is just a 30-minute special that is kind of a pilot for them to possibly do more. And I haven't even had time to watch that because I know if I set aside the 30 minutes to do that, it's going to be the full 30 minutes that I'm not doing anything else. And if a text comes in for work, I don't want to be interrupted in the middle of it, you know, if a phone call comes. And right now, as I said, we're getting so close to Pensacon. We're just a little less than 2 weeks away as you hear this. That's happening a lot. You know, my phone is ringing constantly. My email box is full. I'm constantly getting text messages and t- Telegram and WhatsApp, and I think a carrier pigeon showed up yesterday. Any way people can try to contact me, they're trying to contact me because they want or need something related to the con. And that's great.
Obviously, you have a like a checklist of things that have to get done.
I do.
But as you get closer to the convention, there's not less and less stuff for you to do, regardless of how much you knock off that list, right?
No, there becomes less stuff to do about 4 days after the con is over.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It sounds like a joke, but it's really not. You know, we get to the con, we get to really like a couple of days before the con when pass pickup starts. And that's something we announced this week. So if you are local, you're in Pensacola and you're planning on going to Pensacola, or if you're somebody that's traveling and you listen to, since the podcast is available everywhere, I just want to make it out there. Even though I think our primary audience is local in the Pensacola area, we definitely have people that may be listening from somewhere else. So if you're thinking of coming to Pensacola for PensaCon, or if you are local that likes to go to PensaCon, one thing you probably know about is we do early pass pickup for people that have VIP passes and weekend passes. And we announced the details on that this week. So if you have VIP passes, you'll be able to pick up your passes on Wednesday and Thursday from 2 to 8, Wednesday and Thursday before the con. So that's the 18th and 19th from 2 to 8 p.m. And if you have just the regular 3-day weekend passes, you're able to pick up on the Thursday only from 2 to 8. And then, of course, the con opens on the 20th. So really, like, the real opening for the con for us is that Wednesday, because that's when we start interacting with the con goers face to face, and we start loading everything into the Bay Center and getting everything set up. And I think people don't realize how much work there is even before that happens. But once that happens, it is absolutely 24/7 until it's over. And then there's a lot of work to be done after the con is over, as far as making sure everything's loaded out, making sure that all of our guests get back on their way to wherever they came from or wherever they're going. General, you know, kind of post-mortem type stuff. The stuff that's not as shiny and exciting as, hey, I talked to Keith Coogan yesterday, you know, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I actually did have a video go up on YouTube yesterday, or on, not on YouTube, but on Facebook yesterday, of me talking to Keith Coogan. We've done a couple of shows for Blab TV to promote PensaCon, and we've done a couple of little celebrity interviews for that. So we're using clips of those on our social media. So if you do follow PensaCon on Facebook or Instagram, you can find a video of me talking to Keith Coogan for 5 minutes about him coming to PensaCon, a little bit about his career and his family history, because he's got an interesting family history, and got him to say the line from "Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead." Dishes are done, man. So,
from my perspective, it was a great interview, but then again, I only heard your half of it, so I missed the iconic line reading.
Well, you can now watch it on social media.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. So Jeremy was there when we were recording that, because he hosts the film festival at PensaCon and was on to talk about that as well.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Nick Flagstar's segment was also a lot of fun. So if you are going to the convention, definitely check out those videos that we did for Blab TV. They were a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, and you know, like, I'm it's all about me and all the work that I'm doing, but you know, I mentioned the film festival, the PensaCon Short Film Festival, which is presented by Papa's Pizza, that's going to be taking place throughout PensaCon weekend, and Jeremy is a driving force behind that. So take a minute to talk about what you're doing with that, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's something that we've been doing since the beginning. It's pretty much Steve Wise's brainchild, and I'm super fortunate to be involved with it. We are screening films from all over the world. The really only like stipulations are they have to be under 20 minutes. They have to be genre films. So if you're somebody that loves the cinematic language that we celebrate here week after week, I definitely recommend checking that out. On the back end of things, I've officially finished exporting all of the screenings and got my ballots printed out. Everything's locked down on my end and ready to go, with the exception of the big awards that we give away on Sunday at 2 p.m.
Well,
so if you haven't had a chance to make your way out to the film festival, do that this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more about PensaCon next week, as we'll be a week out from the event. And then I can tell you folks already, go ahead and expect a rerun the weekend of PensaCon, because Jeremy and I will not have time to do a show that week. But we will be back in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. And I mentioned before the break, Jeremy kind of put a little thing on his Facebook yesterday, kind of asking people for things that they wanted us to talk about. And, you know, in fairness, so a lot of the things that people brought up are things that we haven't had a chance to watch yet. But, you know, they've been in the most of the things that were brought up are things that have been pretty heavily into the pop culture consciousness right now. So even if we haven't had a chance to watch them, we're not going to opine about the content of these things without having seen them. But I think we could talk a little bit about the general tenor and phenomenon that are going on, that sort of thing. And I think the place to start is that it seems to be the most talked about show of the moment, and that is Heated Rivalry. You see what I did there with that song, Jeremy?
Oh yeah. I wasn't expecting it to be quite on the nose as it was, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, so Heated Rivalry is this series in the States. It's running on HBO, but it's a Canadian series. It was created by Crave, which is a Canadian streaming service. And it is about these two guys who are on rival hockey teams, and they are also getting it on a regular basis. Let's just put it that way. That's maybe the tamest way that I can possibly put it, because this series
is... I got a synopsis to try out for you.
Very, very spicy is my understanding. Go ahead.
HBO's gay corn for straight women in the same way that Cornhub features lesbian corn for straight men.
Ooh, that's a hot take that I wonder if we're going to get away with having on the air, but I'm going we'll leave it and see what happens. You know,
maybe I said the C word. We're doing our best over here.
Maybe we'll find that, you know, we have more listeners than we think we do. it does seem to be that a dominant portion of the audience for this show is female. That's fair.
Shout out to Jessica Patrick for bringing it up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That being said, I think there are males watching the show too, and I don't think it's necessarily all gay males. I have seen a few gay male friends talking about it on social media as well. But what I thought was interesting about this is, A, it's interesting that when we're in a time where I wouldn't say that society is trying to push LGBTQ themes away, but certainly certain elements of the current government are.
Uh-huh.
And it's very interesting that in the light of that this is the hottest show on TV right now, or on streaming, I guess I should say. And that it's also a Canadian show in a time when our government is positioning us as against Canada. And, you know, without getting too political here, I wonder if that has something to do with why this is so popular. But because, you know, I can't really say anything more than that without getting into politics. And I don't want to get into politics. That's not what the show is about. But what I mean, there's also just the fact that, you know, my understanding is that the book series that this is based on is even racier than the show.
And created by a woman, for whatever that's worth. I do think that there is a very specific niche that this movie or this series kind of presents itself to. But I also think that the finale must have just happened or something, because I feel like as of like Wednesday night, we're recording this on Friday, there's been a lot more discussion about kind of the thing wrapping itself up. So like, I'm curious about it. I never got around to seeing Challengers, and I know you were a big fan of that. That's kind of the first thing that came to my mind when I saw the trailers for this. Would you think that that's a kind of fair comparison?
I mean, in that they're both sports-oriented, romantic-slash-sexy stories. Yeah.
Tying sex to sports is kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that's unreasonable. I did see an interesting article on Deadline that was kind of talking about the success and them talking. The reporter was talking to people at other streamers and talking about why they think it's working and why it's successful. And somebody, I don't recall who off the top of my head, put it very simply, everybody likes smut.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I mean, that's true. But the other thing that I found interesting is there has been some evidence that it's not just the smut that's appealing to people here, because as I mentioned, this is based on, you know, hockey players, and apparently the NHL is seeing a boost from this. like the interest in hockey is on the increase, and it's starting to show up in the NHL ratings. And as we're going into the Winter Olympics, with hockey being such a key sport at the Winter Olympics, it's kind of interesting to see that we're at this confluence. I out of all the professional sports, hockey is my favorite. I'm not a big sports guy, but I do like hockey. And, you know, so that's interesting to see as well. You know, it's kind of the fiction leading to reality, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I wonder, there's almost a chicken and the egg case study to be made about, is hockey's ratings increasing as a result of the show or as a result of proximity to the Winter Olympics?
I mean, it certainly both could be a factor. You know,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And this is my understanding is this is the first time in several years that NHL players are actually going to be able to participate in the Olympics. So,
cool.
Yeah. So I guess the last several Olympics, it hasn't been, you know, because unlike the Summer Olympics where they're playing in the NBA offseason. So the NBA players have been able to play in the Olympics. This is the middle of hockey season, so it's a little harder for the NHL to say, oh, we're going to just shut down for a few weeks and let everybody go compete in the Olympics. But I guess they've decided to do that this year. So, again, haven't seen the show yet, so we can't really talk about it with any kind of qualitative assessment, but that is a very, very big topic right now. I'm
glad Jessica brought that up because she also mentioned Traitors, and I'm not somebody that watches reality TV. However, because I kept hearing people talk about it, I went all the way through season one. I really enjoyed it. And Victoria and I are watching the current season now. So, Julio, I know you're not a big reality TV show guy either.
No, but I've been interested.
Have you heard people discussing this?
Yeah, I've been interested in this one because it does seem to be so acclaimed and people are having such a good time with it. And I guess they've done like celebrity versions of it too. But isn't Alan Cumming the host of this?
He is, and he is just a so much fun and so campy, and his wardrobe is completely over the top, and it's fun. It's kind of like Mafia or Werewolf, you know?
Okay, so give me the premise.
The premise is basically they get a bunch of reality TV stars. They bring them together all in this Gothic castle. I believe it's in Scotland, but it might be Ireland. I know people don't like it when you mix those things up, but it's one or the other. And three of the people are chosen to be quote unquote traitors. As I mentioned, you could, you know, compare them to werewolves or the mafia. And it's their job to go and pick off one contestant a night without the rest of the cast figuring out who it is responsible for the killings.
Okay, so it's Among Us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So that's fun. That could be a fun premise for a show, but beyond that, like what's like, I know it's fun to play those games. What's the appeal of watching it?
I think there's a psychology thing for me. And there's a thing about reality TV show as somebody who didn't grow up with it, that it is a little bit hard to, see past the artifice of something that they frame as reality. But there's all of these different eclectic personalities, and watching the way that, especially the traitors navigate through these situations and try to manipulate people without putting their cards out on the table enough to draw suspicion upon themselves. So for me, it's all of the psychology that I think is so fascinating about it.
So as an audience member, do you know who the guilty parties are going in, or do you play along?
You do know. You're okay. Brought into it in the first night to see who gets selected. But then they also throw these weird little side missions into it that sometimes the audience is aware of and sometimes they're not.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, like I say, it sounds interesting. And once I am not, you know, 24/7 in Pentagon mode, that's something I'd like to catch up on. A couple other things that have been mentioned that are kind of in our regular wheelhouse that, you know, that we've probably talked about here and there on the show. And we'll definitely talk about more as we get, you know, closer to these things happening, or as we get a chance to watch them once we get past Pentagon. But our friend Michael Wolf Granger had asked, is Robert Downey Jr. really the best choice for Doom? Of course, upcoming in Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars. And I think we've talked around that subject here and there over the course of the show. But I mean, I think the answer to that is we won't know till the movie comes out and what they're actually doing with Doom is. It seems like it based on what I'm seeing so far, but you know, we'll see. Juno Joseph and a couple other people actually mentioned the new series Wonder Man on Disney Plus, which is an MCU
so I watched
series.
A couple episodes of it. Leo,
okay.
And it is really, really good. It's Ben Kingsley, Trevor Wallace, no, Trevor something.
Trevor Slattery.
Slattery, that's right. He's a older statesman actor, and then he befriends a younger aspiring actor, and it's a kind of odd couple buddy comedy that's really grounded and emotionally rich, and I'm really enjoying it. I got to finish it off. I haven't seen it yet, but yes, I do feel like the hype behind it is real.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing it, and my understanding is it's kind of an MCU departure, which is... I like kind of stuff that kind of departs from the norm that stays within the universe. I really liked the Werewolf by Night little feature they did. And, you know, there's been a few other things like that along the way. So we'll see how that goes. Have not had a chance to, our friend Chris Kubiak gave us a laundry list of things, some of which are topics that we've talked about before that I just haven't got had a chance to get to the new things. But Starfleet Academy, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I will get to watch it after the show. Same with Shrinking, same with things like Dracula, Love Story, 28 Years Later, and Mercy, and a number of these things that he mentioned are things that we'll get to for sure. But we're going to take a break. Yeah, we're gonna be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. Jeremy, just hearing that song makes me happy, man.
I'm absolutely
literally just sitting here kind of dancing in my seat a little bit. Like it brings me back, but it's also not just like a nostalgia thing. Like, I mean, if you don't love the Muppets, what's wrong with you?
Like, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Like seriously, what is wrong with you if you cannot be enchanted by the Muppets? And of course, the reason we're playing that is because, you know, after, God, how many years has it been since the Muppet Show went off the air? The 80s?
They had a little revival for a period of time on NBC, I think.
Well, there have been other shows. There was Muppets yes. Tonight. There was the show that was just called The Muppets that was kind of like an office-y kind of sitcom.
That's the one I was thinking of. There was that movie that we liked with Jason Segel.
Yeah, there's been a number of movies over the years, of course, but we haven't had something called The Muppet Show since the 80s.
I didn't put that together.
That is this format. And that format and that name came back this week on Disney Plus with a 30-minute special produced by Seth Rogen. That the intention here is for it to be a pilot. And if everybody goes and watches this a whole lot on Disney Plus, they're going to make more of them. And
shout out to Steve Wise for bringing this to our attention on that Facebook thread.
Yeah, this is something I have been following for some time that I've been very much looking forward to it coming out. And I hate that it's coming out at a time that I don't have time to watch it, but I'm very much looking forward to watching it after Pensacon's through. I've heard nothing but good about it from people that have watched it.
My first exposure to this new show coming out was in context of a promotion that Sabrina Carpenter and Kermit did. And Kermit said something along the lines of ironing out the kinks, and Sabrina Carpenter assured him, don't worry, I like a little bit of kinks or something like that.
Uh-huh.
innuendo heavy, but also a younger audience probably wouldn't even pick up on the innuendo, right?
Right. Very Bugs Bunny.
A lot of discourse. People that are kind of shocked or offended to see the Muppets doing kind of adult humor. As somebody who was around during the kind of the heyday of the Muppets, can you speak to a little bit about why that might not be the proper kind of perception of the Muppets?
Yeah, because the Muppets were not invented as a children's property. Pure and simple. Muppets go back to even, I think where the disconnect comes is a lot of people connect the Muppets with Sesame Street. And
yes,
I get that, but Sesame Street is a different group of Muppets than the Muppets. And yes, Kermit has been involved in both. And yes, occasionally a Sesame Street character has appeared in a Muppets project as a cameo, like Big Bird had a cameo in the first Muppet movie, that kind of thing. But they're separate entities, and the Muppets as an entity goes back to before the dawn of Sesame Street. It goes back to the 60s even. And some of the characters, there are characters that even precede Kermit. Ralph has been around longer than Kermit for one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you know, the Muppets have always been something that is for, there are projects that are for all ages. There are projects that are for intended for an adult. There are projects that do things like that where it works on two levels, like kind of the same way the old Warner Brothers cartoons were, where, you know, there's things that just go over the kids' head and there's not a problem with that. That is this kind of thing. The Muppets were on SNL the first season or two.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean,
and
you
know, those were more adult themed. I think it's fair to say it was like the Muppet Show is a family show, meaning there's something there for everybody, but it was never made for children.
Correct.
To your point, like Sesame Street was.
Correct. It's a variety show. And it's kind of like rooted in the old vaudeville and, you know, things like that. So I don't have a problem with that. I think Sabrina Carpenter is an inspired choice for the first guest on this new show. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. What's the next topic you want to tackle from the list that you got there, Jeremy?
So as I'm scrolling down it, I did want to mention, and we've been wanting to get around to Fallout, so thank you, Robbie Rawls, for mentioning Fallout. That's definitely something that the two of us are going to get around to.
Yeah, another series that, you know, we certainly talked about a lot in season one. I was a big fan of season one. I'm very much looking forward to watching season two. I'm kind of shocked that we got through the whole season being released without me having gotten to watch any of it, but that's just been the reality of where we are.
So this one comes from Michael Granger on Facebook, and he wants to know if you and I think Henry Cavill is a good choice to lead the Highlander reboot. For me, I don't have a real strong opinion or preference because I don't know the franchise really well, but I know you happen to be a big fan of the original Highlander. So what are your thoughts on this casting?
Well, yeah, first of all, of course, I want to mention that you can meet the original Highlander himself at Pensacon in 2 weeks. Christopher Lambert is going to be here at Pensacon, so we're very, very excited about that. I am a huge fan of the original film and not so much everything else that followed.
There was a bit of direct-to-video stuff afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the second film was theatrically released, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. But the first film, I think, is kind of an unsung fantasy masterpiece of the 80s, directed by Russell Mulcahy, who was really best known for directing a lot of great music videos before that. It's a very stylized fantasy project. I think that Cavill certainly has his bones as a fantasy fan, and, you know, The Witcher doesn't hurt either. I think it could be good. You know, I don't have a cross to bear against it. I want to see what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, do you feel like Cavill being like a big nerd bodes well for the franchise? Do you think he really likes the first one?
I hope so. I mean, I think that when things are made with love and reverence, it shows. And, you know, so I'm obviously really hopeful that this will be, because honestly, not everything that came after the original movie was made with love and reverence either. I know there are fans of the series. I don't really have a problem with the series per se. I do have a problem with some of the movies that followed. Highlander 2 is, in my mind, one of the most disappointing films ever made. So, you know, there's an easy bar to clear there for Henry Cavill and company.
However, we do have a lot more topics, and something that I think is coming up a lot is Iron Lung. Maybe we could carry it over into the next segment.
Because I think there is a lot to talk about with that, even with me being completely frank about the fact that I don't really know anything about this. I know that about the film itself, I should say. All I know is that the title exists and that this is a film that was made by a YouTuber named Markiplier. Do I have that right?
Yeah, nailed it.
He apparently financed and released this film on his own, and it did huge business at the box office last week. Number two movie in the country, came fairly close to catching up with the number one movie, which is the new Sam Raimi film Send Help, which is also something I can't believe I haven't seen yet, but that's another story.
Not bad company to be in.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of in general celebrate the success of an independent project, you know, without knowing anything about the content involved in it. You know, it's great to see, for lack of a better term, the little guy succeed like this, you know.
So I think we could circle back around to the broader conversation about YouTubers and movie making, but do you know anything about the He-Man creator that Brian Jack Varley brought up? You said creator of He-Man has a GoFundMe active for health assistance.
I don't. I would say that I do find it kind of shameful that anybody that has created something that has brought so much joy and attention to people over the years and has made probably, I would guess, billions of dollars for Mattel. I believe Mattel is the company behind He-Man, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
Has to be in a situation where they have to have a GoFundMe to pay for their healthcare, both because of the inequities of the American healthcare system and the inequities of corporate America taking somebody's work and making billions off of it and not sharing in the wealth.
Yeah. So apparently he was the toy designer at Mattel for over 15 years and designed and named the original He-Man character. If y'all do want to contribute to his GoFundMe, just look up support Roger Sweet, creator of He-Man, and read a little bit about him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And again, what I said there, I realize verges on the political as well, but I mean, you know, if this guy contributed so much to this company, it's kind of like, take care of this guy, you know, just be a decent corporate entity. You know, I'm not saying you have to give him all of the profits or anything, but you know, I'm saying, you know, you find out that this guy is not doing well when you're in the run up to releasing a He-Man movie, no less, that is, you know, is poised to be a big, you know, possible money making engine for your company. Think of it from a purely mercenary PR standpoint, write the guy a check. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
it would be really good press.
Yeah, that, if nothing else, think of it from the most base corporate attitude you can possibly think of it from. Hey, make a great big public statement, make a big show. We're supporting this guy that brought so much to our company. Here you go. Good luck on your medical procedure.
That's how I feel.
That, from a PR standpoint, that's what I would do if I were in their shoes. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I visit Mr. Frump in the hospital. I see him most every day. And when I see Mr. Frump in his iron lung, this is what I hear him say. You know, Mr. Frump is my very best friend. He's never a chump or a tease. He never tells me lies, and best of all, he never disagrees. I bring him candy and flowers every afternoon, sit down by his side and say hi. And then I ask him his opinion of the world situation, and I wait for Mr. Frump's reply. And Mr. Frump would say,
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. I never thought in a million years I'd have an excuse to play an obscure original by Weird Al Yankovic, Mr. Frump in the Iron Lung, from his very first album, on this show. But hey, you know, somebody decided to put out a movie called Iron Lung this week. So here we are. We were talking a little bit about this phenomenon before the break. This is an indie film created by a filmmaker, a YouTuber named Markiplier. Do you know, Jeremy, what Markiplier's real name is? Because that's obviously not his real name.
I imagine it's Mark something. I'm not real sure either.
Yes, we're on the cutting edge of the information about this film here, folks. We know everything there is to know about it. What do you know about this, Jeremy? I know it's a horror film, but I don't know really anything about it other than it's come from this YouTuber who looks a little bit like. And I'm not saying this to be rude or anything, but he looks a little bit like Timu Adam Driver.
I can see it. So Mark Fishback is a YouTuber who's one of the OGs. I mean, he's been doing it for a long time, despite the fact that I never really watched his content. I think what he does is play horror video games and react to them.
Okay.
The movie Iron Lung is based on a game of the same name. And without getting into spoilers, because I haven't seen the movie, but what I know about is there's a death row convict who is assigned with a mission of going in a submarine into a planet that's ocean is full of blood to retrieve this information for a shady corporation. Once he completes this mission, he earns his freedom back. And I think the movie is very immersive in that it tracks the lead character through these very procedural type things. So it seems like an interesting concept. I've never seen anything from the game before, but I really do love to see it where big creators are able to leverage their visibility and their audience to crowdfund these projects that end up, he didn't know if he was going to get a theatrical release at all, as so many things don't. And then they end up opening it wide and it being a massive success story.
Yeah. I'm aware of some other YouTubers having made films and, you know, getting like a streaming release or things like that. But this is the first one I can think of that as an indie release. I'm also aware of other people that have started out with, you know, shorts or YouTubes or things like that, that have gone on to make studio films.
Yeah,
but I'm not too aware of anybody who has self-financed their own film coming from YouTube and actually getting a theatrical release and having success with it. So this is,
that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's quite an achievement.
That's not some way that I looked at it.
It is quite an achievement, and you know, we definitely don't want to minimize that at all, especially to come in at number two in the box office and to continue to do very well. I can't say anything about the film from a qualitative standpoint, but I do want to say that I think this kind of weirdly ties into the exact opposite end of the spectrum, because we've had these hearings this week about the potential Netflix Warner Brothers merger. And and concerns over the fact that this would give Netflix a dominant edge in the streaming market. And Netflix's response to that is, we're not the dominant streamer in this country or in this world. The dominant streamer in this country, in this world, and even when we, first of all, even when we merge, we still won't be the dominant streamer in this country, in this world, because the dominant streamer in this country, in this world, is YouTube. And
yeah,
they're not wrong. I recognize that people don't think of them as the same thing, and they maybe don't think of them for the same level of, I don't want to say quality, but maybe the same type of content. But, you know, Markiplier kind of shows that they're not really wrong, because he's able to get a film out into theaters based on his following that he's made on YouTube and compete with the big boys.
Yeah, you can be sure that the biggest YouTubers, and some of these are people that I don't watch, maybe you've never heard of before, including Markiplier, their biggest videos are probably doing comparable numbers to some of these prestige shows that we talk about from time to time.
Or like better.
Something like Invincible. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's kind of the same thing as the video game industry. Like, people still kind of disregard the video game industry, but the video game industry is making more money and having more people interact with their content and spend time with them than most movies are.
Yeah.
You know, and that is why
it is interesting.
That is why we're seeing so many things like Fallout and The Last of Us that are taking that material more seriously and putting more of a prestige sheen on it and becoming a huge success. And, you know, we just yesterday got the announcement that there's going to be a Baldur's Gate series coming out from the same creator that is doing The Last of Us series, Craig Mazin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I do worry about, you know, corporate hegemony and these companies merging. And, you know, I have reservations about Netflix and Warner Brothers. I also have maybe more reservations about Warner Brothers and Paramount merging.
Yeah.
Which is seems to be the other option there. But they're not wrong to say that YouTube is their competition, because anytime you're spending engaging with YouTube is time that you're not spending engaging with any other media.
That's right. And when companies and corporations started referring to anything you were watching as content, it really muddied the water, because I don't look at YouTube and Netflix as being the same thing. However, you do make a really good point, because if it's just about the attention economy and how much time you're spending in front of one or the other, that's everybody's biggest competition.
Well, and to say that there's not long form content on YouTube is incorrect. To say that there's not, you know, first of all, there are aspects of YouTube that you can choose to bring into your subscription via YouTube with live TV, via there are actual full movies available for rent or for free screening on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of
make content for a while.
Yeah.
They don't anymore, but Cobra Kai started on YouTube.
Yeah, but so the difference between YouTube and Netflix is really just the fact that users can upload their own content to YouTube. And there is more short,
pretty significant difference. Yeah.
And there and the fact that there is more short form content on YouTube than there is on most other streaming services. But I mean, it's there's still a streaming service. They're still providing video and audio entertainment into your household or onto your device from, you know, from across the internet. That's still what streaming is. And interestingly enough, the most traffic on YouTube these days, according to statistics, it's not on your phone, it's not on your laptop, it's not on your tablet, it's on your TV screen.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, people are sitting at home and watching YouTube on their TV screens, on their smart TVs.
And I do.
I've done it too.
Mythical Kitchen and Epicurious in the evenings when I'm cooking. I'm watching cooking content.
Yeah, I've done it too. So, I mean, I think it's a valid argument. And I think that as it's interesting, the dichotomy here that the success of Markiplier as an indie artist, as an indie creator who built his following on YouTube and has gone on to have mainstream success, it kind of proves their point of this giant corporation that's trying to gobble up another giant corporation.
Well, and YouTube is a subsidiary of a giant corporation either. It's not as if their hands are clean either. I think there's something very empowering about users being able to put their own content up and let the world decide whether it's worth putting their time and attention in front of.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And while, you know, YouTube is owned by Google and Google is a massive corporation, YouTube is a lot more democratic, small d democratic, in that, you know, anybody can post things to there. And yeah, there are some hoops you got to jump through in order to get attention and in order to get monetized and in order to, you know, fall within their standards and that sort of thing. It's not like you just throw anything up there, but it does kind of provide a voice to, you know, anybody that wants to have a voice. And you might be shouting into the abyss, or you might be shouting into millions of followers and, you know, a $1 billion career. There are people that have had, you know, that have, you know, look at Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
Great example. Look at the insane amount of money that guy has made with YouTube videos. It's possible. And, you know, is some of it a little bit of a lottery win? Yeah, but it does also require some sort of talent, whether it be the talent that we traditionally think of that is, you know, like something that would win you awards, or it's just a talent for self-promotion and hucksterism. That's still a talent.
Or being able to just kind of distill data and understand what audiences are gravitating towards and being able to replicate that.
Yeah. And if you think that all of these major corporations aren't looking at what YouTube is and trying to figure out how to compete against that, you are sorely mistaken, because as much as Paramount is out there saying, oh, nobody thinks of YouTube as a competitor to the studios, and Netflix is just saying this to try to smooth this out, they all think of YouTube as a competitor. They absolutely do. And that answer from Paramount is absolutely disingenuous. So at any rate, we are, as I mentioned multiple times, we're coming up on PenSCon. We will be back next week with probably a lot more about PenSCon as we lead into the show. Until then, we're done for this week. We'll see you next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.